Good morning. Good day, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. I officially declare this meeting open, and we would be dealing with the final mandates on the provision of revenue amendment bill, as well as to adopt the report after engagement and additions, omissions, and corrections to the report. A draft report obviously was circulated to all members on Tuesday during the first meeting on this particular matter. And a request was made that submissions be made with regard to how do we want the report to be like, and I hope that has happened, but that would not stop members from raising issues or making further inputs on the report in this meeting. I must indicate that this meeting, we only have got an hour for this meeting, given the fact that there's a plenary at 2. So, honourable members, I have received only one apology from Honorable Zulu. He could not attend, but fortunately the province is represented, and Honorable Memela, she is still part of the proceedings, as you would be aware that there's a memorial service of one of our colleagues taking place as we speak. And those are the only apologies I have, honourable members. But looking at the attendance, it would appear that we do form a quorum to be able to deliberate on issues before us today. Now, without waste of time, I'll go straight to the tabling of final mandates on the division of revenue. I will just call provinces as, without following any specific order, I'll start first with Eastern Cape.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Eastern Cape supports the bill and votes for the adoption of the bill without amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, Eastern Cape. The mandate complies with the Mandate Act. This time from the Speaker of the Eastern Cape. Free State?
Free State votes in favor, Chairperson, without any amendments.
Thank you, Free State. It also complies. Gauteng? I see Honorable Montes is not here. May I request Honorable De Beer to read Gauteng for us?
Gauteng provincial legislature support the principle and the detail of the amendment bill as tabled.
Thank you, Gauteng. It's also in compliance. KwaZulu-Natal.
Chairman, KwaZulu-Natal legislature met on Tuesday, the 15th of November 2011, and agreed to mandate the KwaZulu-Natal delegation to the National Council of Provinces to support the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill 17/2011.
Thank you, Honourable Liz. It's also in compliance with the Act. Limpopo.
Thanks, Chairperson. The provincial legislature wrote as follows. Provincial NCOP permanent delegates to vote in favor of the bill without any amendment.
Thank you very much. the speaker himself is in compliance. Mpumalanga.
Chairperson, Mpumalanga supports the bill, but however concerned about the time pressures on the Section 76 bills, they believe that it affects the quality of their input and the engagement of the public. Thank you.
Thank you, Mpumalanga. It's also in compliance with the Act and Northern Cape.
Honourable Chairperson, Northern Cape votes in favour of the bill without amendments.
Thank you, Northern Cape and Northwest. Northwest Provincial Legislature votes in favour of the bill as mandated by the Speaker. And lastly, Western Cape.
Western Cape votes in favour of the bill.
Western Cape votes in favour of the bill. Honourable members, all provinces vote in favour and mandate us to vote as such of the bill without further amendments. Now, we will then go to the report as attached before you, Honourable members, which is the second item on the agenda. I just before we do leave the report, there was an issue that we requested, the point that was raised by Mpumalanga in the negotiating mandate, that we requested National Treasury to follow up and feed us back. For your benefit, Honourable Mashile, as you are representing Mpumalanga, you are not part of that meeting, I think. Am I correct? Yes, you are right. Yeah. The Mpumalanga province mandated their permanent delegate to present to us their concerns relating to the disaster grant, because they were saying they are not benefiting from that grant in terms of the adjustments. And they had disasters in the previous year that when costed amounted to the tune of 22 million. But they realized very late in the processes that the procedure that they took in terms of raising that particular matter for consideration when the adjustments are done was the wrong procedure. So the view of the meeting, otherwise in terms of other grants that were adjusted, Mpumalanga benefit like education and other. But the view that we took was that perhaps we need first to understand what is the right procedure for provinces in terms of raising issues relating to disaster, so that we, instead of just rejecting or not accommodating that part of Mpumalanga, but to rather advise them in terms of what would be the right procedure going forward, so that we can also, once we have received information from Treasury, we are able to make a sound decision on that particular point, because it was only Mpumalanga in terms of the allocations that were raising a serious concern in terms of that particular point. So I'm just briefing you for your benefit because you're not part of the meeting. But Ms. Fanny, you can report.
Thank you very much. I did have time to clarify the issue, and there's two issues around the Mpumalanga disaster that's important. And what I'm going to do is just quote the input that I actually received. During the 2010-11 flooding, which affected almost all the provinces, i.e. 8, including Mpumalanga, were declared a disaster. The verification process was undertaken by the National Disaster Management Center in collaboration with affected sectors, agriculture, housing, education, and transport. And on that basis, it's been that agriculture, Mpumalanga got allocations for housing as well as for education. Housing, 360,000, and education, 3.6 million. And then further, the report of this process reveals that the agriculture sector in Mpumalanga was not impacted by the flooding Hence, there is not an allocation earmarked for this province. But in addition to that, just after that flooding that was declared a national disaster, there was another flooding. And there was heavy rain that occurred in Mpumalanga, and 5 to 8 farmers experienced excessive water logging in their farms. This incident was never declared a disaster. This is when the Provincial Department of Agriculture decided to approach the legislature on the 22 million, and they were informed that they did not follow the process. But even if they did follow the process, because it was not declared a national disaster, no allocation would have been forthcoming in any case. Above following the normal process, the agriculture policy in terms of assisting farmers is only limited to land rehabilitation, closing of dungers and eroded places, for example. Damage to crops, which was the case in this instance, is not covered by disaster relief, as they can be insured. And that's basically the answer. So there's quite a number of reasons that even if they followed the right process, they wouldn't have received anything in any case. But what is important, and that's the issue of process, we do not want it to happen again. So the normal process that needs to be followed is the provincial sector departments need to submit to the provincial treasury, and the provincial treasury will then pass it on to the National Disaster Management Center if it's a national disaster. If it's not a national disaster, but it's something that impacts on the province, that's why it needs to go to the provincial treasury. They would then make money out of their own coffers available in that instance. Thanks.
Honourable members, there's the progress report. Any reflection? Honourable Mashile.
Chairperson, I really welcome the report because that's more or less what one would have expected. You know, it's from bureaucrats. But the chair, what one wants to say is that you sit with a situation where we talk about some sort of a relief, which really, under normal circumstances, when the matter is dealt with, one would really request the necessary attention of a situation which is a relief. It should not just simply be considered as an ordinary proactive or creative financing, where some people are crying because their status quo has been disturbed. Necessary accommodative attention needs to be given. But for now, I think this is water under the bridge for now. But one would still expect that people are down there and they need relief. The provinces, we know they are getting some handouts from national government, and it's a rural province, and you know, to expect it just simply to find some money somewhere else, it is very difficult. It's not like Gauteng, you know, or Western Cape. It's a rural province, and national government or national fiscus always is a source of funds for these rural provinces like the Eastern Cape and the rest. I think I've made my point. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Mashile. Any other comment or input, Honourable members? Are we happy? Okay, thank you. Honourable members, I think what we will then do, we'll go through the report page by page. And make additions, deletions, or corrections where we deem necessary. I will go straight to page 1. try to be slow because there might have been some slight changes. Now, I see the secretaries did not highlight areas that have been changed. I mean, it could have been easy for us to do that, but seeing that they haven't done so, we'll move slow. Page 2.
The heading of 3, it's simply a grammatical thing, but I think we can delete the words of the provincial sphere's share of determination of each province's equitable share of revenue raised nationally is towards 5.
Okay, thank you.
Unruly.
Chairperson, page 3, the table, the last column, the heading. I think it needs to be corrected.
Amount adjusted.
I just need to say adjustment amount. Not adjusted amount. No, the adjusted allocation is an allocation together with the adjustment. But the last column is the adjustment itself.
Yeah, no, you're right.
No.
Adjustment amount. All right. Page 4, if I may. Yes.
I think what I've just talked to also on page 2 is the same.
Okay.
Wherever they find it.
Let's have this return to it. That first paragraph, what is different with the previous is just the mentioning of provinces. Page 4. Remember, in the first report, it was just allocations to provinces without indicating which provinces will be benefiting. So we just added, reflected the provinces that will be benefiting on each grant as presented. So the change is on paragraph 1. The one I could remember of it.
second sentence perhaps should read infrastructure grant is increased by, or somehow indicate whether it was up or down.
If you go to the first paragraph as well, it refers to 240 million through the Transport Disaster Management Grant, and it says this grant will assist repairing road infrastructure damaged by floods in Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and Northern Cape provinces. It's not Mpumalanga, it should actually be Limpopo, because if you actually look at the document, Mpumalanga gets zero under that disaster one, yeah.
Yeah, you're correct. Thank you very much.
To the allocations under the infrastructure program, backstop grants allocation, it's 520.7 million. It's not 500, which makes it a billion. Free State receives 22.3 million. So all these amounts just need to be fixed.
Come again, it's 5 point?
It's 22.3 million for Free State, Gauteng is 6.6 million.
Okay.
Yep, and KwaZulu-Natal is 46.2, so there must just be a point. Limpopo 41, etc. It's not billion. That's currently the way it's written.
Even under Northern Cape, right? Okay. It's like 1,000, right? You guys. Thank you very much, ma'am. Any inputs from our members?
Interested, Chair, in the first paragraph, the sentence that says, it's almost the last sentence of that paragraph, the Commission submitted that poor planning and design of certain conditional grants each year affect performance. I tend to understand that this is related just simply to rushing implementation of projects for purposes of complying to the requirements of accessing this specific grant. But definitely there has been serious talk, Chair, about this specific grant, Expanded Public Works Program, incentive grant, that in principle it looks like it's a discriminative grant, that surely it is available for those cities that have got the technical capacities in order to roll out, and those municipalities which really need finance, and which are the poor municipalities without technical expertise, that needs to be assisted. They will never qualify to access this specific grant. So it's not a helpful grant. I think there was that debate. I'm not sure how we have captured that. And because it is definitely a serious and debate. I think even Salka raised it. Yes, this specific grant actually is non-reachable by the poor rural municipalities. It will never be reachable, and because of their own circumstances. I'm not sure whether we have covered it somewhere else where we are making a point in relation to that specific grant. Because definitely if a person does well, that is what he's appointed to do. And we should worry about those that do not do what they are expected to do. But this grant, it looks like it is to reward those that does well, and which is what they are supposed to do. And that money is actually misplaced. It's really not investment. It is just simply to reward those that are
better positioned, or municipalities that are better positioned because of the capacity that they derived from the apartheid rule, that we, the whole country's municipalities or towns were not developed the same. And I would really move that somewhere along the line we have to cover that specific point, that this specific grant is actually discriminative and biased. Maybe the word discriminative may be a little bit harsh, but it's biased. And okay. It doesn't really help democracy.
What's the views of other members on that specific point before we... And our members, can you reflect on that point? It would seem our members are still. It's fine. I would suggest, Honourable Mashile, that perhaps that point you're raising, we take it further under observation.
No, Chair, the maybe for me, the reason I'm not commenting is there's lack of clarity on the issue itself broadly. Because I'm aware that in those smaller municipalities, my constituency is there, and a number of them, for that matter, in the Eastern Cape. There is a lot of work happening as we speak. Through the public, what do you call it?
External Public Works Program.
Yeah. There's a lot of work going on. That is why I'm reluctant to comment until I get all the facts around this matter. It's not that I'm not proposing anything, but I know there's a lot of work going on there. It has been like that over the years.
I think like it's fine. Honourable members, let's just note the point made there, but then perhaps under the observation we can elaborate further on this point, because much as I don't have figures and statistics to support this point, but the reality is that in most municipalities, particularly small and rural municipalities, they're not benefiting from this incentive simply because they don't have capacity and the technical expertise to help them to be able to come up with programs that will ultimately benefit on this. But perhaps National Treasury can also assist us on that, Wendy? Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to just really try to make it a little bit more clear, Chair, for the members to understand what I'm actually saying. You see, with the Extended Public Works Program, you have got these two funding. One is funds the work. Then this specific one of an incentive is to reward the municipality that has managed to spend on the other funding. And it has to do in a particular manner that's successful and all that. And it's then that now it can apply for this. But now these smaller municipalities, even though that you say they are implementing projects on the other EPWP, but they some of the projects stall, some of the projects are not completed in time, and the rest, and they end up getting disqualified to access this incentive. Now that's why we are saying that the cry even from SARGA is that this grant will only be accessed by those powerful municipalities because they will spend the other EPWP grant. So in a manner that they qualify to access this. You know, this is actually a handshake to say, well done. That's what this incentive grant is all about. Now, the poor rural municipalities, like the one in Bushbuck Ridge, will never get this because they actually struggle with the project. They appoint contractors.
who doesn't even finish the work because of labor disputes. They are not paying them, paying their laborers, and they are not paying machines, and there are delays. And then by the time they finish those projects of EPWP, but then they finish late, and then they don't qualify for this particular grant, and all sorts of things. So that's why we are saying this is actually a biased grant to those municipalities that have got capacity that will comply with the requirements. But the poor municipalities, who does not even have a credible technical director or a project manager, will never access this, because they'll always struggle to finish just the project of a water pipeline. They'll struggle. And some of these projects even get finished after some court cases and all that going up and down. So others even appointing other contractors to go and finish the work of another contractor that they've terminated, and all those kind of things. So it is a good grant, with a well intent to encourage municipalities to perform and implement. But what is the point of trying to encourage a municipality to perform, to implement and perform, when the municipality doesn't have what is required to perform? Then it becomes a problem. Therefore, we're saying, because now the grants may be allocated to all the municipalities, but those municipalities that do not perform, then their grant may be redirected to Johannesburg Metro, to Cape Town City, because they have not qualified to grant, but these other municipalities have performed to actually access it. And then the money will be reallocated because of the powers that the Treasury has given themselves of just reallocating funds. That's the thing. Even though that's on the budget, it's shown on all the municipalities. But those allocations to the municipalities, that they'll never access them. Eventually, it will be reallocated to the bigger municipalities. Hence, we call it this bias.
Yes, Masile on our list, and let's answer that. Mazosi. So, Flo.
Okay. No, Chair, I now understand what the technicality is all about. And I would then suggest that we maybe insert another sentence that says Treasury should assist smaller municipalities technically in order to be able to spend this conditional grant in a manner that benefits all municipalities. I'm not sure whether it's correct, but the technical support part is key to this whole thing.
Honorable Liz.
Chairman, I think that Honorable Musters is hitting it on the head. We need to narrow it down in whether we want to put a comment into the report. Whilst I think there will be general agreement about the challenges facing smaller municipalities, how we deal with that, we might differ on. So a general comment about dealing with that issue, I think, is good.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Just before I start, the Standing Committee on Appropriations is sharing exactly the same concerns, even more so than this committee, because they've actually had a number of hearings where they've actually called in also the Department of Public Works. The Department of Public Works is responsible for this grant. And maybe just to add, firstly, it's correctly pointed out, there's the allocation criteria. And the allocation criteria is different for larger municipalities and smaller municipalities. With regard to larger municipalities, your grant allocation is worked out in terms of the current job opportunities that you've created. And only when you exceed that target by X percentage will you again then get that incentive grant. With regard to smaller municipalities, there's no threshold. There's only one requirement i.e. he must fill in the required forms that's stipulated by the Department of Public Works. And that is where the challenges lie. A lot of municipalities, and similarly those of provinces as well, they struggle to fill in that required forms to prove that you've actually created the necessary job opportunities. And that is the issue of how can the action and the necessary support be provided by the National Transferring Officer, which is in this case the Department of Public Works. So it should actually be the Department of Public Works that should actually then provide the support to both provinces and municipalities. But adding to that, it could also be useful, for example, if you look at the municipal one, how is it calculated, the job opportunities and the like? It's based on the size of your municipal infrastructure grant allocation. So it could actually be quite useful also then to favour job intensive projects that's funded through the MEC. What role that department can also play. But the lead department there is the Department of Public Works.
Honourable Masile, you're the last one on this one.
Yeah, now the last one, page 7, Chair, I think is...
No, before, are we now happy now on the point that you raised? We
well,
are all on the same.
I'm happy that now there is an understanding now, Chair.
Okay.
Probably there will be a way forward on this. Although sometimes we may call for the review of that grant sometimes as we continue.
Okay.
Yeah. I wanted on 7, on the last sentence, Division of Revenue Amendment Bill 2011. Then you can have the other one in brackets after.
Have the 17 in bracket.
17, 2011, that one that is in bracket, but outside must have 2011. Because what is inside the bracket, I'm sure, is a number.
Okay.
Whatever identification number of the bill, but it must be clear that it's a Division of Revenue Amendment Bill of 2011. Thanks.
But isn't it that the bracket actually explains that?
Person, what I've said, I think we'll find it on the next pages as well.
Okay.
And we can just deal with it.
Okay. Honourable Liz?
Mr. Chairman, Honourable Mashile has a good point, but I've seen it like this all over the place. I'm wondering whether it's not the normal way it is expressed. I mean, I wouldn't do it that way. I'd agree with Honourable Mashile, but I do see it like this in all sorts of documentation. Perhaps National Treasury can tell us whether that's a standard way of doing it or is it just our secretarial style.
The
legal terminology, yeah.
But then on that page 7, then there should be proceeding up 17. Should be proceeding up 17. Okay. Page 8.
Reason why the top or the real first paragraph written in italic other than the rest, because if it is a quotation, I think there is a way of putting quoted words.
I think the italic is just quoting the submission of by that particular province.
Okay.
In the negotiating mandates of Mpumalanga, those specific submissions. But secretaries can confirm from correct.
Yeah, but Chair, this, the manner it has been written,
okay, Okay.
It doesn't really mean that it is a quotation, because there is a way to know, to put annotations to quotations, that when a person read can see that this is not part of this report.
It's quoted.
It's extracted from another document. But as it is now, it doesn't really say that. We are just simply thinking, because the letters are not the same as the rest of the body. Is that correct that it is a quotation? And if that is the correct way of quoting, it's fine. But people that are going to read the document next time, they won't have this luxury of asking to be to be confirmed. Thanks.
Our members can reflect.
Chairman, I think Honourable Rashid is correct. Quotations are normally put into inverted commas. That's the normal way of doing quotations. Chairman, it's very fortunate that Honourable Mosesiwe didn't have any whiskey earlier, because I was watching him balancing his cup there. It was
Okay, your point is taken, Honourable Rashid. We're still on page 8.
Chair, I think is to move the heading observations to the correct position. Now it is not what has been happening. Thanks.
Also,
on the same point, which could also be another form of dumping. I don't know. I would want to hear your views, Wendy, on this one. Because what we have also picked up during our visit to provinces, like if I may pick the library grant, you find another grant, because it's arriving in Johannesburg and Gauteng, Northwestern KZN, where the provincial departments will just decide, instead of taking the responsibility of building the library, for example, they will just transfer that money to a municipality and sign a memorandum of understanding. But then in their books, in terms of your accounting procedures and whatever, they have spent. But then the actual work, there's nothing on the ground, because the municipality will use that money. And we have been raising this thing as a concern. I think somehow we need to find a way of finally addressing that particular issue, because it's getting now rife and it's moving to all other provinces. It started first in Gauteng, it went to KZN, and now it's Northwest and Eastern Cape. They are beginning to also do the same. And at the end of the day, all provinces will do that and will never achieve anything, because to me it's another form of dumping money to municipalities and the pretext of it being spent by those particular provincial departments. So that is one challenge that Honorable Mashile, then you can come in with it.
Yeah, Chair, I think on the proposals, maybe the proposals that we'll make or recommendations that we'll make to Treasure is either we take a decision that that particular, those specific grants where these kind of things happening, it is an indication that they are wrongly placed. Then they must directly go to the municipalities, if that is how it can be implemented correctly, so that we have got the correct accountability. Or otherwise, if the minister feels that no, it is correctly placed at the provincial level, then stringent guidelines and rules on accountability and the implementation must be drafted to ensure that the provincial department still carries the responsibility of that spending.
Okay. Susan,
thanks.
Say something.
Thank you. Yes, there's a number of functions currently, let me first start off with how the transfer system works. When we allocate money in terms of the fiscus, we have to allocate in terms of who's constitutionally or legislatively empowered to perform that service. What is currently happening, because there's disputes about who should do certain functions, where certain provinces got certain views and certain approaches are taken in certain provinces and different approaches are taken in others, it is quite messy. For example, one of those disputed functions is libraries, and it's constitutionally allocated to provinces. So even if we wanted to, we cannot give that money directly to municipalities. Because it's not their function, it's a provincial function. And the agreement then should be that if the municipality is given that function to perform on behalf of the province, a service delivery agreement or memorandum of understanding needs to be put in place. But that still not make it a municipal responsibility, though the province must still check whether the actual libraries are built. And that's one of the concerns raised. So there's another concern that's also coming up from a different angle as well. What we often hear from municipalities, and it's not just this one, it's anything where it's a provincial function where they delegate the responsibility then to perform the function to the municipalities. Often, provinces then also underfund the municipalities concerned for that function as well. So there's quite a lot of things that's not working right. We've had cases, for example, where the municipalities complained to us that there's no memorandum of understanding, the province is refusing to transfer the money. We just called them all in, and we actually basically instruct the province to actually do that transfer, because it's just it's unacceptable type of behavior. So we can look at whether we can strengthen it, but the department that's responsible for that function should actually strengthen their own oversight as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much. We're still on page 9. I think under point 10 point, is it, it should be 9.2, in fact, now that there's been changes. Because on this point, because the way it is, I mean, we don't have powers over the unions in terms of whatever decision that we take, but we can encourage certain things through our department. I think on that specific point, if I'm to read it with the other, I'm tempted to agree. In fact, I agree with the submissions of the FFC on that particular on issues of the OSD and the wage bill of the public servants. Because the point that the point that the FFC, particularly 5.432 of their submissions, under the adjustments to provincial government, they are talking about the need for government to monitor and be alive to those increasing wage bill. And there should be a rethink in terms of the planning and the and the timing as well as funding of the salaries of public servants, to the extent that they are also encouraging that there should be consideration of multi-year program, I mean agreements with the unions, so that it can be easy for government to plan ahead. Perhaps if they can be encouraged to convince the union to accept this multi-years. I know in private sector they will go for two-year agreements. So if government, they can be linked to the MTF period, three-year multi-program, so that agreement, so that at least it gives government a briefing space in terms of salary wages, and it will also improve planning. So that would be my take on that point specifically, because the way it is captured, I think it is problematic.
Yes, sir, we should really encourage salary. Anybody who has negotiated a settlement 2 years ago for the next 3 years would be in trouble in terms of really looking at this. We should always be mindful of that fact as well. Much as I agree with you 100%, but we should make that kind of recommendation. Thank you.
Should I move to the next page? Oh, Anon Mashile.
No, Chair, it's on the recommendation, on the observations, Chair. I'm not sure whether we should not take note of the concern of Mpumalanga. This one on the section 76, the time constraint that it still continues to frustrate the provinces because it has not been relieved. I mean, we talked about it in the previous report, but as long as this has not been dealt with, I think it's a perpetual note that we need to keep on having on the report until we really deal with it, because that will explain should after we have adopted this report and then you have got certain municipalities or provinces having protest marches that they are not consulted and whatever, then we should be able to cover ourselves that through the report that this has been raised and we are working on it. Thanks.
And taking secretaries, you captured that one.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mashile. And the last page. I'm still allowing for any additions, honourable members, noting the motion on the table. Honourable Mashile and Honourable Dibier.
Yeah, the last page in the middle, we have DORA, Division of Revenue Act. I think we must qualify which one in terms of the financial years. If we can just do that, and then I may be tempted to support Mazosiwe.
So you are still attempted, you are not yet supporting. Honorable Dever? Honorable Liz? Okay, thank you. So honorable members, that's the our inputs on the report, and I would request that secretaries effect those changes as presented here and circulate the report during the sitting so that we go through it before it is announced and tabled this afternoon or tomorrow morning. The last... Yes. So the last item on the agenda, honourable members, is just on the report, honourable members. Again, just for record, I have engaged with other parties, and we agreed that there won't be a debate on the division of revenue. We'll just prepare a statement and table the statement instead of debating it. So that's what is going to happen tomorrow. There won't be any debate on the division of revenue. Thank you. Then the last part on the agenda, honourable members, is the minutes of the 15th, where we're considering outstanding minutes as well as the Monday. It's only 4 pages. Page 1. Page 2, page 3, page 4. May I get the mover and the seconder? Honorable Dipier, Honorable Becker, Honorable Kubela, thank you very much. Honorable members, Honorable Mashile.
Yeah, Chair, I just wanted to make a comment, Chair, that I'm seeing on this particular minute that provinces is only 4 that pitched up. I'm not sure whether we only invited 4, but if we invited 9, Chair, this kind of trend, I think we need to analyze it. And then the respective provinces that are not coming when they have been invited, which I think we must take an additional step of actually trying to communicate the message of complaint or concern.
Which one are you talking to, Honorable Mashile?
I think this minute of the 1st of November.
No,
are you not on the one that you are considering? 16 November.
Well, but Chair, it's immaterial. All what I'm saying is that when we have invited the provinces, and then but you find that out of the 9 provinces, only 3-4 pitch up or send members of legislature to attend. We must raise those and actually make sure that we raise officials. Thanks.
Come again, Honourable Decker.
The Belanga wasn't there yesterday when we discussed that, negotiate that.
Okay. Thanks, Honourable Members. But in a situation, just to put Honourable Mashed, is in a situation where provinces are not responding positively, as we have agreed, I have been sending, or we have been sending letters to the relevant provinces, and also advising the chair of the council so that matter is corrected going forward. Thank you, honourable members. On that note, this meeting stands adjourned, and I thank you very much. I will also request that we continue to make our inputs on the MTVPS report as circulated, because we'll be adopting it next week, Thursday.